All of the liturgies in this second part of Advent are very beautiful, but today's is particularly beautiful. Today, December 20, is traditionally the day of the Golden Mass. This is known as the Golden Mass because it focuses on the moment, the golden moment, when the Word became flesh, the Incarnation. Liturgically, we celebrate that moment on March 25th, because that's 9 months before Christmas, and if Jesus is born on the 25th of December, then he must have been conceived about 9 months earlier, and so March 25th. But we also celebrate it on December 20th. It's something that we can never exhaust, this encounter between God and man, this union of the Word, the eternal Word, with human flesh, by means of, or through the instrument of, this humble Virgin of Nazareth. So there's a lot of ways we could approach this. Let's turn first to the first reading, which is the prophecy of Isaiah, probably the most famous of the messianic prophecies. That is the prophecy that a virgin will conceive and bear a son and shall name him Emmanuel. Emmanuel means God with us. So that prophecy, way back 900 years before it was fulfilled, is a puzzling one. It was given to this rebellious King Ahaz, who is in crisis because he's surrounded by enemies. He doesn't know what to do. Isaiah comes along and says, well, put your trust in God. He wants to give you a sign. Ahaz says, no, I don't want a sign. I want to do my own will. And God, through Isaiah, says, I'm going to give you a sign anyway. And this is the sign: a virgin will conceive. Now, the scholars will always point out that the term there, what we translate as virgin, can refer to any young woman. And because it's impossible to think of a virgin conceiving without a husband or a man, that's what the scholars say. Well, this must have referred to the wife of the king or some historical figure. But the tradition of the church has always recognized that this prophecy, whatever Isaiah thought of it, whatever Ahaz thought of it, whatever the Jews thought of it, this prophecy always pointed to this virgin, Mary of Nazareth. And it isn't simply a young woman. It really is a virgin. Now, Mary is betrothed. So she's of marriageable age, and she's already betrothed. In the culture of the time, that means she was probably 14, 15 years old, something like that. So God prepared for this moment for centuries. He prepared for the coming of this young woman, this simple virgin, to be the one who would receive the great announcement, the annunciation, that it's time now for God to become flesh. Maybe one way to reflect on this is to see how different it is from all other stories of the encounter of divine and human. You know, in those days, the aside from the Jews, people thought there were lots of gods. I think the Jews were the first to have the awareness that there's only one God. I'm not sure of that, but I think that's the first. Anyway, the Romans certainly thought there were lots of gods. The Greeks certainly thought there were lots of gods. And pretty much every culture thought there's a lot of gods, and there's these powerful figures, immortal figures, who have some kind of interaction with the human family, but it's a little bit mysterious. And so there's lots of stories in the mythology of the Greeks and the Romans where gods meet men or women, and they're not necessarily very inspiring. Usually it's something like this, a god, a Zeus or Apollo or somebody sees a beautiful maiden, you know, on the beach and says, I want that one. And then he goes down and he takes her, rapes her, kidnaps her, maybe kills her, maybe turns her into a stone. There's all kinds of weird stories. And then at the same time, the wife of that god, Hera or Athena or whoever it might be, sees that her husband has got his eyes on a woman, and she says, no way, and she goes down and she turns the woman into a stone, or puts her in the bottom of the ocean, or makes her into a constellation of stars or something. And all these weird interactions, but very often it is connected with infidelity, jealousy, violence, certainly a violation of respect for the human person. And there's pretty much in the divine, in the pantheon, there's a reflection of all human disorders. They just happen to be gods. They're really quite cruel to each other. And that's the way people thought of the gods. They were frightening. And virgins, sometimes they were thrown into volcanoes to appease the gods. Sometimes they were assigned to the temple virgins, sacred virgins, or probably temple prostitutes. But then we have this story. Now, why do I mention all that? Because it's all disturbing. Because this story is completely different. Here's a story in which a young virgin who already is betrothed, already belongs to a husband, Joseph, is suddenly given this announcement, and it's not forced upon her. It's done with great respect, very peacefully. Suddenly, yeah, it's a surprise, but it's not violent. She's not kidnapped and dragged to the holy mountain. She's not raped and left pregnant by some god that she doesn't know. None of these crazy things. She's given an opportunity to make a fully human response to a divine initiative, which is why it's so extraordinary in itself, but also a great model for our own interaction with God. Because God, this is how God respects human freedom. Maybe we can reflect, since we're talking about a very human interaction with God, we can reflect on what Mary was doing when the angel showed up. There's a lot of speculation on this. The gospel doesn't tell us what she was doing. Some of the classical Renaissance paintings show her kneeling down or reading the scriptures, praying, in other words. Maybe so. Certainly Mary prayed. But since we're in Advent, and we know that Advent is a time to be prepared, we've been warned from the very beginning of Advent that God comes at unexpected times, at times when we don't expect him. He could come in the middle of the night, remember, in the fourth watch of the night, at dawn, or in the day. I mean, there's no telling when he comes. So maybe Mary was asleep. People sleep about, a third of the time they're up. So she slept like any other 15-year-old girl in the home of her parents. Or maybe she was doing her domestic chores, which is probably what she did most of the time. Cooking, preparing bread, perhaps taking care of the dishes, cutting vegetables, or maybe dealing with weaving or, you know, taking care of clothing. That's what people did, especially the women in the house. Also, a big part of family life is childcare. Now, Mary, according to the tradition, is an only child, and so there may not have been any other children there, but there would be a lot of children in Nazareth, and maybe she was with people in the neighborhood. Who knows? The point is, she was doing normal human things in a normal human way. And then if we want to get even more basic about it, She was a fertile young woman. She would have been probably, now we don't know, of course, probably in that stage of her fertility cycle when she could conceive. That's a very normal thing. That's the way it is with every woman who's in of a childbearing age. Once a month, an egg is released and is available for conception. Nothing extraordinary about it. Until the angel shows up with this message that Mary has found favor with God and that God has a plan for her which is not just normal, ordinary human. It's divine, it's eternal, it's powerful. It's the announcement that a king is going to come and rule over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. And this new king is going to be your child. He's going to be son of the Most High. He's going to be son of God. He's holy. This is why this is the golden mass, because this announcement changes everything. Now, Mary is no less normal human young woman, but she's encountering something that is mind-bogglingly in unhuman, superhuman, divine. Mary does not assume that this is going to take place miraculously, that she's going to conceive without a man, because she asks, well, how can this happen? I don't have relations with a man. I'm not living with Joseph yet. How can I conceive? I mean, everyone knows that children are conceived by relations of men and women. That's how it happens. And Mary knows that. So she's thinking, I belong to Joseph, but I don't live with him. What are you talking about here? Not only that, she has consecrated herself to God. She doesn't expect to be a mother. As far as we know. And then the angel explains it to her. No, this is not Joseph. We're not talking about Joseph here. We're not talking about any man. We're talking about the Holy Spirit. The entry of God into the picture. Okay. Now, as I say, this is an extraordinary golden moment. This is the most significant moment of Advent. You could argue that this is more important than Christmas, because at Christmas this child is born and he's seen for the first time. But the incarnation takes place here, at this moment of decision by Mary. Now, the important thing is, she says yes. She says, I am the handmaid of the Lord. My life is for God. My whole being is for God. My awareness of myself, my time, my body, my future, my plans, my relationship with Joseph, it's all for God, and I'm going to entrust myself to you. Let it be done to me according to your word. So it's a very mature, it sounds very simple, but it's a mature, total decision, a complete yes to God. It gives God full permission to fulfill his plan. It's a model for us then. What are we supposed to say to God? We're supposed to say yes. Fiat. Fiat mihi. Let it be done to me. Whatever you're talking about, and I don't understand it all, whenever you're talking about it happening, and I don't know when, let it be done to me. And when we say that, God does the rest. So as we celebrate this golden mass and this golden day, let us commit ourselves to saying yes to God. Yes to God today. Yes to God this morning. Yes to God tonight. Tomorrow. Yes to God. Yes to God. Let it be done to me according to your word. And then God's will be done.